Welcome, travelers. We're aware that your journey was difficult, but prepare to have your questions answered, for you have been granted an audience with the Masters of Modern.
And welcome back. This is Masters of Modern. I'm your host, Alex Kessler, here with my co-host.
What's going on, guys?
How's it going, Ben Bateman? And today, Craig Blanchett is here in the office from Top Decking Web Episodes Network and Toy Surprise Daily.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
So today, we are actually going to be talking about Fate Reforged and all of the cool cards in it that are for Modern. It's our set review. As with the last set review, we are probably going to not do a deck tech today, though we are going to talk about the ban list, because the ban list announcement is Monday.
Coming right up.
And so we want to kind of break that down.
Kessler, I'm just going to jump in here. I wanted to give a huge shout-out and a congratulatory hug on the podcast to our friend Andrew Brown, who just won GP Denver. We actually mentioned him on the last podcast in the past, which aired in the future, which is now in the past, and mentioned how he was grinding. And he won a GP the day before that cast went live.
I know. It's funny because literally we're talking in last week's episode about how he's working really hard. He's going to make it one day. Yeah. You know, just grinding all those PTQs and GPs. And he, like, wins before it gets released. So it's just weirdly backdated. It's interesting that our last episode was so time travel themed, seeming that this entire block that we're in currently in Magic is time travel themed. So I think there's three tiers of cards. I think there's one card that's for sure going to be banned, and I think that's Treasure Cruise. I think it warps the format. You know, even though only two decks in the top eight and it didn't win the last GP, literally a third of the field was Blue-Red Delver in day two, which is ridiculous. And right. Jund was 40%, and they banned Deathrite Shaman and Bloodbraid Elf.
Yep.
You know, that's such a, like, ridiculous amount of cards in the top tables that it doesn't make sense for it to stay legal. It's warping the format. I don't think anyone disagrees.
So what's tier two?
Tier two are the cards that everyone thinks are possible to ban, and I think some of them will be, and some of them won't be for different reasons.
That's Jeskai Ascendancy.
This includes Jeskai Ascendancy,
Birthing Pod,
Dig Through Time.
Okay.
These are those three cards specifically. So Jeskai Ascendancy is a card that breaks a lot of rules for Magic.
Right.
A, it comes down and can kill a person on turn two.
But it's turn inconsistently. Three.
It's a consistent turn three kill deck in the semi-less resistant to hate versions of the deck that use, like, our four color. Or it's a control deck that just combos down in a way that's really resilient in the newer versions of the list.
They don't like that.
And one of the issues is that the fact that it kind of plays similar to how Eggs did and how Storm does, where it's like, I'm dirtling and doing my thing for 10 minutes, oh, I win, and you just sit there and do nothing, and it's terrible for coverage and terrible for timing of tournaments. It's not that slow, and it hasn't been putting up that good of numbers in any of the tournaments recently. On the other hand, at the World Championship, like, half of the field was Jeskai Ascendancy combo decks.
Right, and when you ban Seething Song for similar reasons, it's sort of indicative of, I think, what's going to come.
Right, and I think I would not be surprised if Jeskai Ascendancy got banned. I would not be surprised if it doesn't, because it offers a new, different type of deck that doesn't exist in the format, and it's powerful, but it's not too powerful. And there are arguments made that Treasure Cruise is really a bigger problem, and by taking Treasure Cruise out of the deck, you're lowering its power level enough to let it stay in the format.
So then what do you have to say about Birthing Pod? Birthing Pod.
I want to get the Birthing Pod last.
Okay, sure.
Just because there's the most to talk about it. Next is Dig Through Time. I actually think they're going to keep Dig Through Time.
Yeah, I think so too.
I think that the decks that it makes stronger, it doesn't speed them up and it keeps them in their, like, turn four. Maybe makes. I think its biggest argument for banning is it makes Twins slightly more consistent. But the fact that on turn four, delving it only lets you play a 2-drop versus a 2-drop and a 1-drop or 3 1-drops, like what Treasure Cruise lets you do in Delver, makes it so I don't think it's going to be that overpowered, and it lets them kind of keep one of their marquee delve spells in the format.
I also think that when you just look at and we've talked about this a lot, we've compared those two cards, but I just think the difference between one mana and two mana in this format is so significant.
It's huge.
To make those delve cards good, you do have to play a specific kind of deck.
Right.
I mean, you can't just jam those into every blue deck and figure it's going to be good. So the fact that it's two mana and you have to set your turns up before you play it to get value, it feels like it's more fair.
Right. And you know, there's always been a case about Modern where, like, the problem is there's no good blue draw spells. Like, Jace is banned, Ancestral Visions is banned, and, like, Treasure Cruise added that, but it's really tempo-focused, and there's not a good control card, and Dig Through Time is kind of that. It plays at instant speed, it's more dirtly than Treasure Cruise, because you have to, like, use two mana. I think it really fits in the format, and I can imagine them trying to see what the format looks like without Treasure Cruise, but with Dig Through Time. Kind of what they did with Deathrite Shaman, where, like, here's a new card. It's the rare. We want to keep it as the marquee card, so let's wait a little bit and see what happens.
Right, right.
I can see them banning it, and if they do, it's just because, oh, we just are afraid of all Delph spells. Let's get rid of them. But I think it's very safe to keep in the format right now, sure, just to see what happens.
What the heck is Tier 3? Things to unban?
Yeah.
Okay, gotcha. Let's get...
what do you guys think about the, you know, dig through time, you get more consistency in what you get, but you only get two cards as opposed to, or sorry, with...
You get two of the top seven as opposed
to... Two of the top seven as opposed to three random. What are you guys' thoughts on that? I mean, one, you get three cards. One, you get two cards that are a little bit more consistent.
I think that consistency and card selection aren't as dangerous as velocity. I think that what Treasure Cruise does in, like, extending the power level of Delver and Jeskai Ascendancy decks is much more dangerous than the ability for Splinterton to find its combo a little bit more consistently. Especially because it's... There is no Ponder, there is no Preordain. This offers a hoop, like hoops that you have to draw, like jump around to get there, which I think is an interesting way of the format working.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a Delve card that works how it's supposed to versus Treasure Cruise, which is a Delve card that is a Power 9 card that's hiding within a Delve card.
It's funny too, because I do understand now that they could print that card, that they could print Treasure Cruise without realizing it was going to be a problem. Because you think about the deck it would go in, you think about Delver, and in my mind I go, well, no, I really want my graveyard. The Snapcaster Mage, like, right. I don't want to get rid of my graveyard, you know, Tarmogoyf, like, this is what you're thinking.
And that's then, interesting choices. That's like, yeah, choice, and they like you making interesting choices.
And then you just watch it, like, I watched a lot of the GP Omaha coverage, and every time somebody would cast a Treasure Cruise, it felt like they got seven cards in their graveyard in one turn.
Right.
I mean, it was ridiculous. Right. Like,
you drew a new Treasure Cruise, set up the next one. Like, it was just... And it's so swingy. When you're playing with Delver, you literally, like, we're par for par. We're one for wanting each other the whole time.
And then I cast Treasure Cruise
and cast it all. I'm winning now. And, yeah, like, by a margin that is much larger than you would assume.
Yeah, yeah.
So then the last part of the second tier, which is the cards that could be banned, is Birthing Pod. This is the one everyone's talking about, I think, the most right now. It's,
yeah,
the most contentious. It's something they have to be looking at. It makes it so there's not as much diversity in the format. And I think something that Wizards might be considering, and with the tier three that we'll talk about, which are, yeah, unbannings, we'll kind of get into another way they might do this. They may be resistant to banning cards to just bring it back to what it was in August. Like, if they just ban Treasure Cruise and Dig Through Time, and they're like, and there's just, like, pod decks and junk decks are just everywhere.
Yeah.
And it's just like, look at what August, it's like kind of what the format was in August, but like with Sage Rhino.
Yeah.
It's not that interesting of a ban.
Do you mean Siege Rhino?
I do mean Siege Rhino.
There is no card called Sage Rhino, kids.
So, Birthing Pod, by getting rid of it, will just completely alter the format. It's a modern format that has never existed. And it is on a power level that is so high that it makes sense, and it is format warping.
Okay, so that being said, if those are the cards that are in tier 2, before we kind of just talk about each of them, because we should give our predictions then move on, let's now talk about things that could be unbanned before we break everything down.
Right, and we talked about this. We did an entire episode on the ban list and, like, what cards are probably okay to come off there. There are three candidates people are talking about. Yeah. One is Ancestral Visions.
Yeah, people have been talking about that for a long time.
People are talking about a long time, and I think one of the reasoning right now is if they do not ban Treasure Cruise, which, based off of the diversity of Omaha, which is debatable, but the top eight had eight different decks or six different decks.
Right.
You know, and... If Treasure Cruise is legal, there is no reason Ancestral Vision should be legal or banned. I think that's a little flawed reasoning. I think Ancestral Visions is still very good and works in a different way. But as I mentioned before, I think Treasure Cruise is just the one lock on going away, and you don't switch them. I think they're both too powerful.
You think Ancestral is going to stay gone?
Yeah, I think it's going to stay gone.
Bloodbraid would be number two, right?
Bloodbraid Elf would be number two. Yeah. I think Bloodbraid Elf is the most likely of any card that we're going to mention, of anything. If not this one eventually being unbanned.
Yeah.
Is, we mentioned this before, it took a bullet for another card. It shouldn't have been banned in the first place, really. The other argument for it being banned, other than, you know, power level and it taking a bullet for Deathrite Shaman, is the fact that it limited diversity in mid-range decks. It made it so you had to play Jund. But because of Sage Rhino...
Siege Rhino.
Because of Siege Rhino... That's no longer true. There's now an actual unique, like, choice to make between, do I want to play the value-oriented Bloodbraid Elf, or do I want to play the just guaranteed beater of Siege Rhino?
Right.
And with Siege Rhino in the format, there's no real reason for Bloodbraid Elf to be banned. It doesn't.
And, like, the reality is, good 4-drops that aren't named Jace the Mind Sculptor don't need to be banned in Modern. Like, 4-mana, you just
I mean, there's an argument there that they could print 4 drops that are too powerful for modern, but again, like, yes, I agree. Like, it's
4 mana with counter spells existing. It's just, it's an expensive spell. I mean, I guess, okay, the reason Blood Red Elf is so powerful at 4 is because of Cascade, so even if you do counter it, you still get something out of it.
Right.
And
but that's fine. I'd rather a good card against Cryptic Command exist, and just, it doesn't do anything inherently broken. It's value-oriented. It can seem unfair at times, but it offers cool choices. You can, you know, Boom Bust comes back as a deck possibility. I think it offers a lot of interesting things to the format.
I agree.
The last thing is Golgari Graveshroll. It's just the card that no one thinks should be there anymore. The 6 versus the 5 that's legal isn't that valuable, and the best decks that are, like, using the Dredge are Dredgifying decks, and they are, A, cutting their Dredge cards in general, and Golgari Graveshroll is too expensive to make Dredgevine come back.
Sure.
So, like, it doesn't offer that much other than the fact that it can come down as a beater at 5.
Right.
But that's interesting and not necessarily over, like, a 5-drop that is big versus, like, what Tron is doing.
Sure.
Like, I don't see it being that much of an issue.
Okay, so we just mentioned now the one for sure banned card, which is Treasure Cruise. The 3 tier 2 cards, which are Dig Through Time, Jeskai Ascendancy, and Birthing Pod. And then the cards that possibly could be unbanned, which are Ancestral Vision, Golgari Grave Troll, and Bloodbraid Elf. With those 7 cards in mind, let's just go around the table here and give a quick prediction, explanation. We'll move on to the set review. Go first, Kes.
So, I mean, I've kind of said it already, but I think Treasure Cruise for sure out. I think Birthing Pod is out. I think Jeskai Ascendancy and Dig Through Time are in. I think Bloodbraid Elf is in. I don't think Ancestral Vision is worth putting in, and I wouldn't be surprised if Grave Troll doesn't get put in, but that's my, like, my wild card, and I think they could unban it and it just wouldn't do anything to the format.
I think they're definitely going to ban Treasure Cruise. I think probably they're going to ban Jeskai Ascendancy because it feels too much like other cards that they've had to ban in the past. I think Birthing Pod's the most interesting one in question. It feels to me, it's very interactive, and Birthing Pod decks are interesting, and I don't think they're going to ban Birthing Pod, though that one's on the fence. The first two, for sure. And then beyond that, they probably unban Bloodbraid, and Ancestral Vision probably stays gone. The others, I don't think anything's going
to
happen.
I think you can't unban both. I think you might be able to make an argument for unbanning one versus the other, but if both are in the format, that cascade into the other is too strong.
I do think it would be interesting to put Ancestral Vision into the format. I mean, I do. I think that card,
even though, like, Treasure Cruise has kind of proved that draw 3 cards is maybe too strong.
Yeah, but, like, it's different when you top deck late in the game and you can play a Treasure Cruise versus when you top deck Ancestral Vision and it's 4 turns later. It doesn't help you in a Delver deck to top deck that when you're going 1-for-1 and, you know what I mean? You need to push the extra 3 damage.
I mean,
waiting 4 turns, you're still
just kind of like late game led instead of like.
And that's
why
that
game
card was fair and standard when it pretty much existed for the most part. What do you think?
So I don't have too much to say about all of those cards, but there are 3 cards in there that I'm interested in. Treasure Cruise, you know, obviously, I think that's going to be banned. That is, it does seem too strong to be in the format. But I do really hope that Birthing Pod does not become unbanned, because that just seems like a fun deck. It seems like my kind of deck, the deck that I would play. And, you know, that would get somebody like me into the format, which I think is something that Wizards wants to hold on to. And, you know, lastly, Golgari Grave Troll, one of my favorite EDH cards, so I would love to see that come back to the format. I agree with Kessler that 6-drop, I mean, it's like, come on. I don't know. I think it would, you know, be interesting to see what that does with Delve, but at the same time, I think it'd be interesting, so why not see it?
All right, so that's kind of what we think is going to be banned next Monday. Next week, we'll actually probably end up talking about what was banned and what that means to the format.
100%.
Moving forward, let's talk about Fate Reforged.
What do you guys just think about the set in general? What's your general feeling on it?
I think Manifest is underrated. I think everyone is kind of looking at the set right now, and it has kind of that problem that a lot of the second sets have, where the power level is weird. I think this is stronger than most second sets that have come out.
Yeah.
And people aren't used to that, so they're not really grasping some of the cards that could be very powerful.
Craig, anything you're excited about?
I'm excited about the set. I can't really say too much about it. You know, it's I've taken a look at the spoilers and whatnot, and you know, I'm excited about a few cards. Like, I'm really excited for what this is setting up for, is really what it comes down to. This set, I guess, I'm not too excited about, but I'm really excited for the next set.
You're waiting for those dragons of Tarkir to come stomping through.
I really am, man. You know, I got in around the time of the first Elder Dragon set, and you know, it seems like they could do the opposite Elder Dragon, you know, set, and that kind of excites me. I don't know. There's a lot about this set that I think could be really interesting.
Yeah, I think definitely the thing that excites me the most about this is probably the hybrid mana symbols on the con cycle. I just like the activated ability or triggered ability.
Yeah, some of them gain really good value. I mean, we'll talk about, I think there's like three that will probably see some amount of play in Modern, and we'll definitely talk about them, and yeah, they're really cool.
So those are exciting, and then beyond that, I think Manifest is pretty cool. There's like a deck I have in mind that relates back to something I tried a few years ago with like Ethervile and trying to get cards that have weird casting costs into play, and I think you can kind of combine that with Manifest. So let's actually just start with Manifest.
So yeah, so of the new mechanics, Manifest is probably the most unique, relevant, and important. Manifest reads that you put a card onto the battlefield face down from a specific area, not necessarily the top of the library, but most often from the top, face down, and it is a 2/2, and then you can, if it is a creature, flip it for its converted mana cost of the creature, no matter what the creature is, even if it does not have morph.
Yes.
The important things of this are the fact that unlike morph cards, where you can only put morph cards down, any creature can be put on the play, and there are unique ways to maybe get them out from being face down.
Yes, it's a strange ability in some ways. It's a cool little take on what Morph did. Morph was not the strongest ability for constructed formats overall. This is a nice way to make it a little stronger. If any ability would try to blink, as in exile and immediately return to play one of these creatures.
The most common in Modern is Restoration Angel.
And it is not a creature. It actually is a land or a sorcery. It immediately flips back to being a 2/2 colorless creature. So you can only unmorph via flipping an actual creature, which people are talking about Emrakul and other strong creatures.
Right. So the three unique ways to use this for are value, where it's like you're just getting a creature and it kind of lets you 60% of the time draw a card because you can flip a creature from under it, which is the least insane. That's more of a standard value, I think. But the two major ones are either cheating in giant creatures using blink effects, or getting to play creatures that have enter the battlefield effects that are negatives.
Or just herky-jerky casting costs, like you can't play it unless you do X, Y, and Z, or something bad to you happens.
Right.
And so let's say it costs 2 mana, and it's like a 6/6.
Like the Hunted Cycle, or
Mirror Superior, or Scab Ruinator, cards that are
in older formats, Phyrexian Dreadnought, and Legacy. Exactly. Normally you can't cast it because you need to sack 12 worth of power to get a 12-12 for 1. With Manifest, for 3 mana, you get a 12-12.
Yeah. Interesting, because it's already in play.
It's already in play, right, exactly.
That's awesome. Yeah. Okay, I didn't think about that. Now, what about the cards that have morph, you know, as part of the creature?
So you can morph them for their converted mana cost or for their morph cost. So sweet. Something that's interesting, and it's really only standard draft, maybe even, but Grandmaster, I think is what it's called, which is one white, one colorless for a 2/2 that gives all other creatures +2/+2 when it's flipped over. Normally, it costs 4 to morph. Now, if you manifest it, it costs 2. So you can, it's cute. So that's some kind of the things that you can kind of there are morph cards that are cheaper, but now you get the effect that they give.
So that's pretty much what Manifest does.
Right.
And there's a handful in various colors. They didn't really make it color specific. They kind of spread it out over every color,
right,
I believe.
And there are some that are powerful and there's some that are limited, and same as every mechanic. But I think if Manifest is good, there's more good Manifest cards than you normally see from a mechanic that could see play in Modern.
So we're going to rattle off around 20 or 25 of our favorite cards from the set. We're going to go through them. If there's any cards that we miss in the set review that you guys are super excited about that we don't cover, please tweet at us.
Yep.
Let us know. We kind of tried to pick out the ones that we thought were most Modern relevant. Obviously, we like a lot more than the 20 or 25 cards we're going to talk about here. This is just the ones that we think we have time for today. Let's get started. Cass, go ahead.
So first, and we're talking about Manifest. The first one is Soul Summons. Craig, why don't you read off what it does?
So Soul Summons is a white sorcery for one white and one other, and it says manifest the top card of your library.
So this is Manifest Bear. Like, it literally is exactly, you're getting a 2/2 for 2. It might draw you a card. The important thing to remember with all the Manifest cards is that they're efficient. The efficient ones, the ones that are this low cost, could be very powerful. And this would, if there is a Manifest deck, this might be a piece of it just due to the fact that it's not that expensive. There's not that much of an opportunity cost. and playing a 2-2 for 2 with an ability is not irrelevant.
If this is the white manifest, then I believe the green equivalent of this is called Wild Call, correct? Which
yes.
is the next card we would cover. And that is green, green, and X. It's a rare. It states, manifest the top card of your library. It comes into play with X +1/+1 counters on it.
Yeah, so these two together, there's two cards that can create the 2-2 bear effect for 2. The other one can scale up very conveniently, so later on you can get a bigger creature. Both let you have the opportunity to then get the creature from underneath it. So if there you need efficient ways to do it, these are the best one. There are maybe three other cards that are better that have added abilities that cost more, and we'll get to those when we get to them for manifest. But the important thing to remember is that there is enough cheap manifest cards that there could be something in there on curve.
It's a unique ability. Modern hasn't seen this ability yet, obviously, and it will be interesting to see if somebody can kind of create a deck. This Wild Call is essentially a Hydra, but for one less mana.
Yeah.
It's the first time they've ever made a Hydra that doesn't cost 1 plus X. It's yeah. 0.
It's plus the first
X.
Time they've ever printed the green... Like, finally they printed the green creature, put a XX creature into play for how much mana you spent on it.
Yeah.
So next, and now we're going to go alphabetically.
Okay.
So next we have Abzan Beastmaster. It's a 2-1 Hound Shaman for 1 green and 2 other. An uncommon. At the beginning of your upkeep, draw a card if you control a creature with the greatest toughness or tied for the greatest toughness.
So the important thing to remember this, the reason I think this could see play is in a green deck that's not using black necessarily, curving Tarmogoyf into this starts netting you a giant amount of card advantage if this guy can survive. The problems, it's at one toughness, so killing it is not going to be that difficult, though then they're spending their turn dealing with your 2-1 while you have Tarmogoyf in play.
Yeah, it's green card advantage. There's not a great deal of cards in green that just straight up draw you cards. This is also interesting to think about in decks that play heavy toughness creatures, decks like Doran, other things, cards right. that see some play like Spellskite. That's maybe worth thinking about, but it is turn 3 and it has one toughness.
And something to always be aware of, cards that have either a creature or maybe even a planeswalker attached to them that gain you card advantage are always something to look at. The reason these cards are good is because they can attack. You're playing a threat, but if they don't, you know, they also are gaining you advantage in some way. That's why Bob is good. That's why Chandra is good.
Sure.
So, like, yes, 3 mana is a lot, but it's better than, like, something like Harmonize, because Harmonize costs you a turn, and you draw 3 cards, but then you didn't affect the board state.
Do anything.
This could block. This could attack. This does a lot of different things by just being a creature.
Sure.
And you're getting the possible good card draw dungeon. Next card.
So next we have Alicia, who smiles at death. She's a 3-2 legendary creature, human warrior, for 1 red and 2 other. She's a rare. First strike, when Alicia, who smiles at death, attacks, you may pay hybrid mana, 2 hybrid mana of white or black. If you do, return target creature with power 2 or less from your graveyard to the battlefield, tapped and attacking.
Interesting card. A lot going on. Very complicated. Sets up a cool engine during combat where you can be, you know, recursive with a Goblin Guide or some other cheap threat you've played early. It does cost 3, but it's a reasonably costed body at 3-2 first strike for 3.
Theoretically, you could say it's 3 mana for a 3-2 first strike that brings in a 2-2 token and draws you a card next turn.
Right.
So, like, there is a lot of value there. It's pretty aggressive, and that's something, you know, these Zoo decks could very well be looking to play. This is a great Zoo 3 drop, especially if, you know, we mentioned earlier, Bloodbraid Elf gets unbanned. Bloodbraid Elf into this seems
good.
Awesome.
But you also have to say to yourself, 3 mana dies to Lightning Bolt. Though, it's probably more likely that it would be 3 mana brings back something that just died to Lightning Bolt.
Right. So like yes, it does Lightning Bolt, but these Zoo decks are all about a glut of efficient threats that they have to answer each of them or they're going to die, and this is just a great way to rebuy the things they answered already.
Yeah.
And I think it definitely has potential.
Weird name, right? Alicia?
Well, it definitely feels like a harkback to Kamigawa block, and in that this entire set block kind of feels like that in many ways, that they're like, Kamigawa block was a failure.
Right.
In many different ways. This is them being like, you know what, we can do a Asian continental based set themed around these cultures, but do it in a way that actually is cool instead of the like problematic situation they have with Kamigawa.
Sure.
All right. So next we have Cloudform. It's an uncommon enchantment for 2 blue and 1 other. When Cloudform enters the battlefield, it becomes an aura with enchant creature. Manifest the top card of your library and attach Cloudform to it. Enchanted creature has flying and hexproof.
So the important thing here is hexproof.
I think this is probably my favorite of the manifest cards, honestly. Even though it's sort of underpowered compared to some of what the other ones do, But 2-2 flying and hexproof for 3 mana is not the worst. I don't know how great it is in Modern. I do like the fact, though, that because of hexproof, the basic removal can't remove in response because it comes into play attached to it, and that even the most common removal spell that could get rid of this, which would be Abrupt Decay, that could get rid of the enchantment, would still leave you with a 2-2 that could potentially be unmorphed. That seems good to me.
So
I'm going to explore that.
The two things that I'm looking at this card, one, anytime you see Hexproof and Evasion, you need to be aware of it.
Yep.
It, like, every time they've ever printed that card in the past, it's been a problem somewhere, so that's something that's super relevant with this card. On top of it, the biggest weakness to the I blink my Manifested Emrakul into play, making it a giant creature, is that any targeted removal spell ruins your day. This lets you, you know, on curve, play this, the next turn play Restoration Angel, and you now have a Emrakul in play, and they couldn't have stopped it at any point, which is really important and really good to be aware of.
Especially with it's blue, and in the early turns of the game, Serum Visions and things like that being available in the first 2 turns to set that up.
Right.
So you know what's coming.
Exactly.
It seems pretty good. Seems pretty good. I like it.
All right, so next up we have Dark Deal. It's an uncommon sorcery for 1 black and 2 other.
Meet me in an alley. I'm going to sell you my organs.
That's kind of what the picture looks like. And it says, each player discards all the cards in his or her hand, then draws that many cards minus 1.
So, you know, this is a Windfall variant. Windfall is a very, very, very good card. This is in black, which has never had this ability available to them. On top of that, it does some shenanigans with, like, the Megrim decks or the 8-post decks or any of the discard kind of theme decks, and is very strong with the community card Waste Not, because you just gain all of this value from your opponent discarding lands and creatures. Like, you can net 6 mana. You can get a bunch of 2/2s. Like, there's so many cool, powerful things you can do with this. On top of that, Windfall is a good control card. Any control deck playing this is now getting, like, one of the better card advantage cards of all time. This is worse than that, but it's also less expensive.
Yeah, I like this card because in black and modern, the thing that we talk about a lot is tapping out on 3 is bad. It's in black, so tapping out on 3 and making them discard the combo piece they're holding to beat you with seems pretty good to me.
Right.
Especially if you've played an early threat or maybe like an Inquisition of Kozilek on turn 1 and gotten maybe the most worrisome thing out of their hand. Just puts you in a position of power if you've played a threat or a Bob or anything like that.
And one last, you know, corner case that we've talked about also is graveyard decks. And this is a great discard outlet because you dump your hand, you dump all those Vengevines into the graveyard, and now you get to draw an extra 6 cards that lets you rebuy those Vengevines.
Next up, we have Frostwalker. It's a 4/1 elemental for 1 blue and 1 other. It's an uncommon. When Frostwalker becomes the target of spell or ability, sacrifice it.
So this is like the Phantasmal Bear, all the illusion abilities.
Right. It's only super efficient for its converted mana cost.
Yeah, it's a 4/1 for 2. It's interesting because mono blue aggro is like, it's sort of like mono black control over the years. Like, people are always like, oh, can you make mono blue aggro? So there's like a possibility now. 4 power for 2 in blue, where you don't have to complicate your mana base, seems okay. I don't know how good it is necessarily, but that's an idea.
Even not. I mean, if there's a blue X deck, whatever other color, that just wants to be a threat-based, efficient tempo deck maybe even, this card could definitely see a home. Especially if any of these Temur cards that have Ferocious want to see play. But even if they don't, this is a card that definitely can enable just really aggressive starts.
4 power on turn 2 is good.
Yeah. It's phenomenal. And, you know, a lot of times with blue, you just need blockers that can kill their creature. And with blue, they typically don't have that.
It's true. And, you know,
so something like this, even if it's just a blocker to kill their creatures.
Right. And like, mono blue Delver could be a thing. This and this, and then just bounce spells where they just can't play creatures and you're just attacking them for 7 every turn seems decent.
I agree. Yeah.
So next up, we have Grave Strength. It's an uncommon sorcery for 1 black and 1 other. Choose target creature, put the top 3 cards of your library into the graveyard, then put a +1/+1 counter on that creature for each creature in your graveyard.
So I threw this on the list last, and the only reason I threw it on there is because I noticed it's sort of a combo-y I win right now type of card. If you could find a way to mill yourself effectively, it is the sort of thing that this could equate 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 power for 2 mana, and your opponent probably wouldn't see it coming. And it's also counters, not until end of turn. So it creates a permanently enormous threat. This is one of those cards where if you were to play... This is one of those cards that if you were to play some sort of lots of mill effects, and you played cards like Jace's Phantasm or something, you could choose who to mill, depending on how you wanted to win. If you milled yourself, your Phantasm would get huge. If you milled them, your Phantasm gets huge.
On a deck that kind of exists, Dredgevine, it's around. We've talked about before. We'll eventually deck tech it. But this is a card that you're self-milling yourself with, and you have a high glut of creatures because you need them for Vengevine to work. And this can just make any of your Hedron Crabs or your Birds of Paradise into a big threat. The issues with it, I can imagine, are A, it's just terrible against any targeted removal.
Yep.
I mean, you still get the value of three creatures, I guess, but it's still just, like, completely blanks and you lose, like, a lot of value out of it. On top of that, it's not a creature, and because Vengevine is so interested in playing as many creatures as possible, this hurts your game plan with itself and with your other cards.
Yeah. It's a loose. It was just an idea, so.
Yeah. Oh, I definitely think it has potential.
Cool.
Next is Hero's Blade. It's an equipment for two. Equipped creature gets +3/+2. Whenever a legendary creature enters the battlefield under your control, you may attach Hero's Blade to it. Equip is 4.
So the reason this card is interesting, I put it on the list, it's probably really, really loose. But the fact that you can play this on turn 2 and play Geist on turn 3 and then just swing for a hexproof 6/4 with 4 in the air, so 10 damage on turn 3 or 4, seems strong.
Seems pretty loose. But it seems possible.
And the problem is it just does nothing if you don't have other legendary creatures.
Right,
so
right.
Yeah, I think there's a possibility with the previously mentioned card, Alicia,
yeah,
that one who misses death or something along those lines.
Laughs at death.
Laughs at death is, you know, those are two legendary creatures that are efficient 3-drops. This on 2, you can make kind of maybe a legendary aggressive deck.
Yeah, there's good creatures. Yeah. Isimaru and Brismaz or whatever that white card in Standard is.
Right, exactly. So, like, maybe there is an efficient, maybe it needs a couple more 2-drop creatures that are threats, but Thalia is even in this format.
Solid,
so, like,
yeah.
There's possibly something there, and this just, like, will gain you value out of left field. Anytime equipment is free or cheap is something that maybe look at.
Agreed.
Next up, we have Humble Defector. It's a 2/1 human rogue for 1 red and 1 other, an uncommon. Tap it to draw 2 cards. Target opponent gains control of Humble Defector. Activate this ability only during your turn.
It's a weird card. It's a weird, unique card.
So, what's important here to really notice is that red never gets you draw 2 cards.
Hmm.
Or you draw a card.
It almost is always paired with a discard.
Right. Yeah, it's either you have to discard 2 cards or discard a card to draw that many cards. And so that, first off, is a great place to look. Second, it is a bear, and in a red aggressive deck, which is the exact type of deck that's looking for good card draw, this guy can just attack until you want to draw 2 cards. You can play him on turn 2, just be attacking with him with Goblin Guide, and then the moment you're like, well, they have a blocker, I'm just going to draw cards now. Or they're going to attack into me, I'm going to block and sack him so he dies and I draw 2 cards. There's
I like
a lot of value there.
Yeah. I like cards like this just only for the strict purpose of when they make unique cards that have wonky abilities that are uncommon to what you would normally see on a Magic card, it's like things to be taken advantage of. And
right.
There are cards that say gain control of all permanents you own, which are interesting, that don't see a lot of play. This is like one of those, you look how they interact. I don't think it's really that good. I think that for what it does, it's much more likely you would just play another color that draws cards a little more efficiently, but it's possible. I just don't really like it.
Especially if Treasure Cruise leaves the format, red is going to need card draw engines, and this is just like one or two of in your burn deck. Seems strong in the sense that you're just, it's going to attack until you can't attack anymore, and then at that point, it's going to draw you cards or block.
He's a 2/1, right?
He's a 2/1.
Yeah, so Gutshot. You
he's like, he's on curve. Yeah, exactly. So like, they even if they try to kill it, as long as he's untapped, it loses them value.
Yeah.
And on top of that, it's aggressively costed enough attacking-wise that it could see play.
So yeah, you could also, I suppose on curve, you could play him on 2, draw your cards, and then electrolyze, killing him, getting the extra card, and doing 1 to the dome.
Right.
That seems decent.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely cool shenanigans to do with him. Or, like, just Anger of the Gods, draw 2 cards, anger, kill all creatures, you draw 2 cards, and kill all their creatures seems decent. There's, like, ways to definitely play around with it.
Not bad.
See, I would have been more interested if you could use his ability during the end of their turn. But the fact that you can only use it on your turn, because at least then you could, you know, tap it, give it to them, draw 2 cards, draw 1 card on your turn. It's like a 3-card advantage kind of thing.
I mean, the issue with that is that they don't want it to be too defensive.
Right.
They don't want you to be able to block and then sack it for value.
Because that sounds like a straight-up made-for-Delver card, whereas they need the sorcery ability so that it's, like, clunky.
Red's aggressive. It's the same reason a lot of the black get-them-back-from-my-graveyard cards can't block.
Yeah.
Right.
There's just, like, developmental reasons for it.
It's fair. I don't see this card seeing any play in Modern, but I could be wrong.
Yeah.
Next up, we have Meringue River Prowler. It's a 2/1 human rogue for 1 blue and 2 other, an uncommon. Meringue River Prowler can't block and can't be blocked. You may cast Meringue River Prowler from your graveyard as long as you control a black or green permanent.
So, I put this card on the list. The main reason is that there are almost zero cards under four mana cost that let you cast themselves, creature cards from the graveyard. And the reason that's relevant is Vengevine's entire deal is you need to cast the creature cards. So the fact that you can mill this with your Vengevines and be able to get those Vengevines back due to the being able to cast it from your graveyard is a huge value gain that that deck kind of does need. Because often what you find is you spend all your time discarding cards that you no longer have creatures in your hand to be able to get the Vengevines you've discarded back. This lets you kind of do that. The only other card is the 5/6 for 3 that you have to exile 3 creatures from your graveyard that isn't very good. So this is kind of a more efficient, not as big of a body, but better for what you're trying to do version of that card.
In the traditional sense, I think what you're saying is totally true. The other reason I think this card is interesting is for this one reason. It's very, very rare that Magic cards reference a permanent of a color as opposed to a creature of a color. So the fact that this card could be played in some sort of control build where, like, even just what we were talking about, maybe you're playing cards like Waste Knot or Megrim, and you're making you discard and sacrificing things, right. You can consistently replay them and attack with them, and even though it's slow, all you have to do is control a permanent, not a creature. Right. So you could have something in play that's netting you a card advantage, and just keep bringing this guy back.
Blue-black control deck or blue-black X control deck that's playing, you know, Phyrexian Arena or any of the black card draw engines. There's definitely advantages to be gained with this card.
All right, so next up we have Mardu Woe Reaper. It's a 2/1 human warrior for 1 white. It's an uncommon. Whenever Mardu Woe Reaper or another warrior enters the battlefield under your control, you may exile target creature from a graveyard. If you do, you gain 1 life.
So the only reason this is on the list is because I think it's interesting that this paired with Dryad Militant makes it 8 2-power 1-drop effects in white that can help mitigate the effect of your opponent's graveyard. And if Treasure Cruise leaves the format, then it's less relevant. But just the fact that you can do this sort of thing right now, and 8 is much better than 4, and it's much more consistent. You always look for redundancy. I think it's interesting. I don't know if there's a deck there, but
I think with Scavenging Ooze, the aggressive decks kind of have their deal, and I think the potential to be blown out with this card and any of these 2/1 white cards, the reason they don't really see play, is so high with Electrolyze, Gutshot, Lightning Bolt even, but like Pyroclasm is the biggest problem, is like that wrecks you.
Totally fair. Yeah, totally.
Next card.
So next up we have Mastery of the Unseen. It's a rare enchantment for 1 white and 1 other. Whenever a permanent you control is turned face up, you gain 1 life for each creature you control. You can also pay 3 at 1 white and 3 colorless. Manifest the top card of your library.
So this is maybe my favorite manifest card of the cards that are available. Because, A, it's one of the white ones. You can play it early, and then while you're keeping your hand up for, say, Restoration Angel or other things to kind of stop your opponent from doing stuff, you can, at the end of their turn, if they don't do anything, manifest. So you're gaining value towards the end of the game. It's a great control card. And I think, you know, any type of control threat that, any type of control threat that's hard to deal with is something to keep an eye on. It's not the best against Abrupt Decay, but you can gain value off of it, and so it definitely has potential. And it basically says put a 2/2 creature in and 60% of the time draw a card. Seems decent.
Seems fine. I tend to stay away from cards like this for some reason. Control isn't really my game usually. Tempo is more my game. I can see how there could be value here, and it is definitely the repeatable manifest on it makes it, with that stuff we're talking about and trying to break that ability, it's probably the easiest to try to break the ability with. Right. But it does seem a bit slow, and it's much easier to respond to when you're not getting a really unfair creature early.
The thing to also remember is, I guess the two things to really remember is that the fact that any threat you can play in a control deck that you can pay for an inefficient amount, but then at your leisure make it a threat, is something to keep an eye on. Sure. On top of that, because Snapcaster Mage is the format, you actually gain a little bit more value if they kill your creatures.
Sure.
So if you're like, I manifest a Lightning Bolt, and they're like, well, and they don't know, and it's just a 2/2 creature, and they have to block it or kill it, then you just put a Lightning Bolt in your graveyard that you can Snapcaster back.
That's interesting.
Snapcast back later.
That's very interesting.
So next up is Merciless Executioner. It's a 3/1 Orc Warrior for 1 black and 2 other. It's an uncommon. When Merciless Executioner enters the battlefield, each player sacrifices a creature.
Fleshbag Marauder number 2.
Yeah, it's awesome.
I mean, the one relevant thing is now there are exactly 8 of this effect. This effect has always been borderline playable. Keep an eye out on it. I don't think Right now, there's a home for it. I think Liliana is just better, but possibly with this many versions of the deck, something with Sun Titan or some way of recurring them seems like a possible strong ability.
It's like the flip side of exactly what we were just talking about with the white creatures. It's like there's now eight of this effect that like doesn't really see play, but it seems in theory like it's possibly to be
exactly
good, so.
All right, so next we have Monastery Mentor. It's a 2/2 human monk for one white and two other. Has prowess. Whenever you cast a non-creature spell, put a 1/1 white monk creature token with prowess into the battlefield.
So this is one of maybe the three cards that's becoming the face of Fate Reforged. This is the most expensive card in the set right now. I think it's overrated. So, you know, a lot of the comparisons are being made to Young Pyromancer. The difference between 2 and 3 mana and the colors that they're in is so huge. I think color is less relevant, but I think the fact that I mentioned this earlier, but 3 mana can kill you tapping out 4, while 2 mana can set you up for a game that they can't beat you on.
I mean, let's not forget, Young Pyro was printed a long time ago, and it took a long time before that card like exited just the world of like casual and fun and actually became competitive. People didn't play that card like right when it came out.
I mean, it saw play in Legacy, and it saw some play in Modern, but it wasn't the dominating force that it is right now until Delver became a thing. And when it comes down to it, the way Modern works is tapping on turn 2 is fine. But once you hit turn 3, the things you're playing have to be much more powerful, or you need to be midding the game in some other way. And this isn't that type of deck. In Delver on turn 3, you want to already have your threats in play and get onto the stop your opponent from doing stuff game plan, and this hurts that game plan.
Yeah, it's I think the more interesting deck to think about than this going in like a Delver shell would actually be probably the deck that doesn't play blue at all. It would probably be like a deck that played black, white, red, played Pyromancer and this, and on turn 1 could, like, thought see something out of their hand so that you weren't actually worried about losing.
Like a mid-range version of right. Pyromancer. Yes, and it could be strong there, but then you're walking into, like, that deck wants to play a lot of creatures, which then are bad with this card.
Right.
These prowess cards are meant to be played in... These prowess cards are meant to be played in tempo decks, and this card just hurts your tempo game plan. That one extra mana is so bad.
But the one thing that white does have that blue doesn't is that white has really efficient token making cards. And so when you can play instant speed cards that make tokens and this makes tokens and sort of like overrun effects, like, you know, I mean, Rally the Peasants is a really bad example, but that kind of thing, if you can get a bunch of, like, it's much more realistic. And I'm not saying it's good for that reason.
But is this better than some of the other token creators? If you're doing a black-white token plan, for instance, I'd rather have Elsbeth and other cards and then, like, my turn 3 be just some efficient spells than tapping out on turn... Like, I tap out for this, and they play Deceiver Exarch into Splinter Twin, and I'd literally die that turn, and that's not an uncommon situation.
Yeah, I don't think it's great. I'm just saying I don't think it's... You said it's significantly overrated as the most expensive card. That's true. I don't think it's going to be great. I think it's possible.
I think it's much worse than Pyromancer. I think it's going to be good in Standard.
Yeah.
I think that this card is not going to be nearly as good as Pyromancer. Even though the tokens it's making are better and it is a better creature, Pyromancer coming down a turn early is just so much bigger of a game. It's kind of what we talked about between Treasure Cruise and Dig Through Time. Dig Through Time is good, but the fact that Treasure Cruise can cost 1 mana is significant.
Yeah. Agreed.
All right, so next is Monastery Siege. It's a rare enchantment for 1 blue and 2 other. As Monastery Siege enters the battlefield, choose Khans or Dragons. I love these cards. So Khans, at the beginning of your draw step, draw an additional card, then discard a card. Dragons, spells your opponents cast that target you or a planeswalker or a permanent you control cost 2 more to cast.
So this cycle of cards, it's really good flavor. I think it's cool. I like this one because it costs 3. It's the most efficient. The two abilities are unique. The fact that you can get them down in blue on the same card. And the second one is the same ability that Frost Titan has, which was pretty undervalued when it first came out.
But for everything you have, not just itself. Frost Titan only had it on Frost Titan.
Yeah, so this is interesting. One of the major things you see in blue when they give you this kind of effect is it's often counter that... One of the things you often see in blue is that it's often counter that ability unless they pay 2. And with those illusion cards we're talking about, like Frostwalker and Phantasmal Bear, the fact they can't target your thing unless they pay 2 more makes it much, much more difficult if you were to land this after landing some early threats.
The other side, you know, I think this card currently won't see any play as long as Jeskai Ascendancy is in the format. But if they ban Jeskai Ascendancy and decks are looking for a blue enchantment that lets you kind of make your draw step better and lets you cycle through cards at for free, this could see play. And then on top of that, if you're a deck, like it had, like choices are always something to look at. The reason charms are always good and playable in every format when they come out is because even though they're all small effects, having the choice to be better depending on what's going on is so much, so important that like it definitely ups power level on these types of cards.
The last thing to mention about this that does make it unique is how many blue consistent discard effects can you think of that are in Modern that would enable you to fill your graveyard with specific cards and or would enable like something like Madness, which is a fringe ability, but it's that kind of thing to keep in mind. You can discard a card every turn. You're going to have the ability
right.
to trigger that every single turn.
Yep.
So something to think about.
Next is Rally the Ancestors. It's a rare instant for 2W and X. Return each creature card with converted mana cost X or less from your graveyard to the battlefield. Exile those creatures at the beginning of your next upkeep. Exile Rally of the Ancestors.
So this has like obvious combo implications built in, where you just fill your graveyard with like a whole bunch of hasty red creatures, and then you play this, and they all come into play, and you attack for a whole bunch.
Right, if you get Goblin Guide, like there's so many good, Monastery Sweeper even, there's so many good 1 and 2 drop red creatures with haste that if you have some way to get them into your graveyard in some efficient manner, on turn 4 you can cast this and you now like have a board filled with like just a bunch of damage that your opponent can't handle. It's definitely a combo card. There's also some value probable decks that maybe can gain value of it, like an Aristocrats thing, but I think the definite game plan is just get a bunch of haste red creatures in the play, attack with them, GG, move on.
So next up we have Renowned Weaponsmith. He's a 1/3 human artificer for 1 blue and 1 other. It's an uncommon. Tap him, add 2 to your mana pool. Spend this mana only to cast artifact spells or activate abilities of artifacts. Or you can pay 1 blue and tap him. Search your library for a card named Heart Piercer Bow or Vial of the Dragonfire. Reveal it and then put it into your hand. Then shuffle your library.
So the second ability is interesting. Only because we don't know what Dragon Vial...
It's only relevant if Dragon Vial is, like, 1-drop artifact, sack it, do 3 damage to target creature. Right. Some, like, good spell.
Something good. Probably is not relevant. Now, this... We talked about the Grand Architect deck kind of recently, and it's interesting to see now
Are you saying that you like cards that go with Grand Architect? Is that something that you like to do, then?
They recently printed the Convoke 2-drop version guy in M15, I think. And this guy, and then there's the one from Darksteel, and there's Aetherium Sculptor. There's a lot of 2-drops you can try to curve into Grand Architect with. None of them really are as good, probably, as Aetherium Sculptor, so this guy kind of just gets, like, for Modern, like,
well, the question
whatever.
Is, this better than the Convoke one? Because the Convoke, this is, like, basically the Convoke one. It has a lot of similarities to the Convoke one, but is the deck we're talking about, is it better that you can just tap this for 2 mana? Or when you don't get Grand Architect, or is it the fact that the other one can kind of tap for 3 mana in many, or like does a different impression?
Yeah, I think what it comes down to is that Grand Architect deck doesn't play anything that costs 1 right now that's an artifact, and if it did, then the Convoke guy would be better because you could just play him and cast something with him.
Yeah.
Whereas I think if the deck is entirely 2 to 4 and 5 and 6 drops, it's kind of 6 of 1, half dozen of the other. I mean, you could. If you needed to play a ton of them, if you had some strategy that was like total redundancy, you now have the ability to play a ton of 2-drops.
Right.
But I don't know how relevant that is.
So it also comes down to what the 2-drop effect is. If the thing is relevant for the deck, it's possible a thing. I actually think that there's a standard artifact deck that was kind of floating around that's almost completely based off of M15 cards that this could cycle into and make much more powerful. So in standard, it's possibly going to see play. Because it's an additional effect to the Convoke one. We'll see.
Yeah.
All right, so next we have Soulfire Grandmaster. Ooh. This is probably my favorite card in the set.
This is probably a lot of people's favorite cards in the
set. Definitely my favorite card in the set.
All right, so Soulfire Grandmaster is a 2/2 human monk for 1W and 1 other for a mythic rare. So it has lifelink. Instant and sorcery spells you control have lifelink. And for 2 hybrid mana of blue or red and 2 colorless... The next time you cast an instant or sorcery spell from your hand this turn, put that card into your hand instead of into your graveyard as it resolves.
So there's really there's 3 relevant things about this. A, 2/2 lifelink for 2, not the most efficient card on the planet, but I've seen worse cards see play. More importantly, giving spells lifelink. Yep. This has never been done before, so this is, you know, once again, you're looking at a unique effect on a 2-drop mythic rare, which, like, every time a 2-drop is powerful and has a unique effect, you need to pay attention. Right. That's, like, Stoneforge Mystic, no one paid attention to it, and then it bit everyone in the butt a year later. This guy, you know, every burn spell is now Lightning Helix, and Lightning Helix is double Lightning Helix.
It's crazy.
So, just signing this into the blue-white-red decks that have been around in the format forever seems like a strong play. They've always needed kind of a low threat that needs to be answered in many ways at times, and this kind of could become the Stoneforge Mystic of Modern, since Stoneforge Mystic is banned.
The one thing that I hear every single EDH kid complain about with this card is that it's not legendary. Every one of them was like, why is this guy
I thought it was. When I first read it, I was like, that's a legendary creature.
Seems like it. I mean, this would be the best general ever. It'd be so ridiculous.
And a lot of times, like, that's what they did with Prophet of Kruphix, right? Because I mean, that would be such a broken general. And I think this would be the same thing. Like, it'd Team America with, you know, lifelink and instance and sorcery is just come back to your hands. Crazy.
Enough about Commander. Let's talk about Modern, the format we're supposed to be talking about.
Excellent.
Really, the third ability on this card is the most important. The fact that you can buy back spells. This can range anywhere from just infinite lightning bolts to that have lifelink.
Yeah.
Just for fun. To infinite turns.
I will say this about this card. I have three things to say about this card. The first one, Training Grounds, anybody? I love the card. Yeah. I love the card Training Grounds, and I've always been convinced that if you found the right card that was good without it, Training Grounds would just make a card insane. And with this card alone, there's just some crazy stuff you can do. The second thing I will say about it is, obviously, the colors that it's in, it seems like it's sort of built to go in the deck you're talking about in blue and red. That seems very, very, very powerful. And then the last part of it is I just like that the hybrid ability on the activated ability allows you to put it into either deck.
Boros decks or blue-white decks.
Yeah.
I mean, something also to pay attention to, you know, with the buyback, buying back Remand every turn is going to lock out most opponents from the game. Buying back Lightning Bolt is going to lock out a lot of opponents from the game. Buying back Mana Leak is going to stall the game until you get to the point where you're going to win the game anyways. There are so many of these cards that this blue-white-red deck already plays that, like, if you get him back every turn late game, great. Early game, if you're just getting a guy who's going to gain you some life to keep you alive against opponents that are trying to get in the red zone, great. Like, there are so many different advantages of this card in the blue-white deck that deck kind of needs. The biggest problem is that it's the only card in the deck that's going to open you up to, like, the removal spells being relevant, which I'm not the most worried about.
Yeah, yeah. It's also combo-ish. I mean, there's a lot of... I'm sure there's going to be 100 combos that come out with.
You would almost have to play, like, one time... Time Walk? Not Time Walk. What's the...
Time Warp.
Yeah, you almost have to play one Time Warp in the deck so that you can just, like, eventually go infinite. If you get the 9 mana, you win. There's no way your opponent can beat you.
There's probably a version of this deck that wants to play, like, Isochron Scepter. Isochron Scepter and Silence. There's probably a version of this deck that wants to play, like, Isochron Scepter and Silence. Then all of a sudden, on 2 mana, you can just, like, lock them out with Silence.
Yeah, the Fog decks in the form of the Turbo Fog decks.
Yeah, so, anyway.
There's definitely a lot of cool things you can do with this card.
For sure.
Cool. So next we have Soul Flare. It's a 4/4 demon for 2 black and 4 other. It's a rare. Delve. If a creature card with flying was exiled with Soul Flare's Delve ability, Soul Flare has flying. The same is true for First Strike, Double Strike, Death Touch, Haste, Hexproof, Indestructible, Lifelink, Reach, Trample, and Vigilance.
So this card immediately brings to mind the original Delve card, which was, or I shouldn't say the original Delve card, but the original Delve creature, which was Tombstalker from Future Sight.
I think this kills Tombstalker.
I agree. Nobody really plays Tombstalker. It used to get some play in Legacy. I don't know if it still does, but it's sort of the same kind of thing. It's better. It's like combo-y in a way.
There's definitely a cool combo-y creature deck that, like, just for value, if you just notice you're playing a black deck that somehow gets cards into the graveyard often enough, and a lot of those cards have keyword abilities, you can then get, like, just for value, play this, and it can be a Hexproof, Flying, Vigilance, First Strike for just no reason. And on top of that, if you're trying to combo off with this, there's definitely ways where you can just go crazy and play on turn 2 or turn 3 just a impossible to defeat threat.
Yeah, absolutely. It's very combo-y, and then you can even just think about cards that are just have a lot of abilities and are good, like Vampire Nighthawk or something.
Like Baneslayer Angel. Yeah, like they're just... Or yeah, Vampire... Like, this with Vampire Nighthawk in your deck seems insane.
Yes,
it's crazy. And then, like, you're just building a giant Vampire Nighthawk or building your own black Baneslayer Angel. Like, there's so many, like, powerful cards that are just... This card has all of the abilities. You can do that with this.
Yeah, agreed.
Sweet. All right, so next up is Tassigur the Golden Fang. He's a 4/5 legendary creature, human shaman, 1 black, 5 other, delve. 2 hybrid mana of blue or green and 2 other. Put the top 2 cards of your library into your graveyard, then return a non-creature card of an opponent's choice from your graveyard to your hand.
So this is blatantly my favorite card in the set. Basically... This is what Hooting Mandrills wanted to be. Yes, Trample is relevant, but what's more important, because your game plan with Dredgevine, which is the deck that this just shuffles right into, is to get a bunch of threats at once. So Trample isn't relevant. You're going around them anyways. What's relevant is that you're getting a 4/5 versus a 4/4, which can go through a Tarmogoyf, or at least bounce against a Tarmogoyf. And on top of that, you're getting a card draw engine. With this coming into play, we mentioned this earlier, one of the problems Vengevine has is you get all these cards in your graveyard, but it takes your whole hand to do it, and you don't have a way to start buying things back. This guy lets you start drawing creatures or drawing cards while continuing the game plan of putting more cards into your graveyard. There are so many cool things that it does all at once that the deck just needed to happen for a pretty low cost. And if worst case scenario, you're getting a 4/5 for one, that's magical Christmas land already. So that all these other abilities are just icing on the cake.
Seems, very, very good. How different do you think if you were to win the Invitational, would your card look from this?
My face would be like right there. I also don't know if I want to be shirtless on a Magic card.
Tweet us if you want to see Alex Kessler shirtless on a Magic card.
All right, so next is Temporal Trespass. It's a mythic sorcery for 3 blue and 8 other, delve. Take an extra turn after this one. Exile Temporal Trespass.
So this is funny because I sort of think that if you like read a lot about Magic, you study a lot about Magic, you start to notice trends, and people like to over and undervalue things based on what's happened in the past. There's been a lot of undervaluing with Elf cards recently that we have obviously now found out. Treasure Cruise and Dig Through Time are amazing. I think this card's bad. I guess it's okay in the same way that like Temporal Mastery was okay.
I have 4 specific things to notice about this card.
Oh, please.
One, I think... It's possible this card is good. I think the reason I say that is because it's being super undervalued right now. And not necessarily good, but maybe better than people think it is. Delve has been consistently undervalued. And because of cards like Temporal Mastery and the other Time Walks that have all kind of busted, every time they've printed one of the Power 9 blue cards, other than Treasure Cruise, they've been bad. And so people are like, this has to be like those. It seems bad, probably bad, great. So if there's... a mythic that, like, could just blow things out of the water, this could be it. Beyond that, I also think just Time Walk effects aren't that strong. I think they're strong, but they're not backbreaking versus draw 3 cards. And Delving 8 is a lot. 3 blue is a problem. The last thing that I do find interesting about this card is I think Dig Through Time, this card, and Treasure Cruise, I think Dig Through Time originally was Time Twister. I think they printed Ancestral Recall on 1, Time Twister on 2, Time Walk on 3, and that was a vertical cycle they had originally, and then realized Time Twister for 2 is bonkers and made it into Dig Through Time, which has some trappings of that. Looking at 7 cards is kind of like drawing 7 cards. There's like similarities in there that I can completely imagine that was just like a cycle they made, and then they realized that one of them was way too strong.
On that note, it is hilarious to think about like the original Magic set and them just like sitting there being like, oh yeah, we're going to make these, the Mox and the Lotuses, and then blue will just have these 3 effects. They'll be great. They're all going to be blue.
Yeah, Time Twister probably could have been black. It was red at some point. I think Richard Garfield also knew what he was doing. He's in interviews been like, oh yeah, I knew all those cards were overpowered, but I didn't think this game would be popular enough where card availability would be a problem, where you can have more than one. I thought he'd make like 1 or 2 sets. Like most games back then especially were like, not that many people bought them, so people probably have like 40 cards. They probably like buy a booster pack and like one of the pre-made decks and just like, that's the deck they had.
There was no pre-made decks back then.
Yeah,
but there was the starter pack.
Oh right.
Yeah. 75 cards. But I mean, wasn't an Alpha only have like 1500 print run or print
sheets?
Yeah,
Alpha was super small. I mean, Beta was a little bit bigger.
2800, I think.
Yeah. So like it, on top of that, was hard to get these cards. But that's why they were so expensive.
Speaking of which, I know this is like an off subject, but did either of you guys see that video on YouTube recently of the guy pulling the Lotus?
Oh,
yeah,
of course.
Yeah, of course.
Amazing. Just like,
and Tropical Island.
It's really funny. Yeah, anytime, awesome. Any magic related thing, like at all ventures into regular pop culture,
yeah.
17 people posted on my Facebook
me too.
Wall.
Yeah,
because they're like, oh, hey, look, this butt crack thing. Yeah,
I swear,
I got the butt crack thing on my wall like 6 times.
People
too.
That I haven't talked to in 10, 15 years hit me up that day. Like, people friended me on Facebook because of that post, which was...
Oh, man. So funny, the butt crack thing. God, just kept getting reposted.
I recently got the butt crack thing reposted on my wall 6 months later because some random guy was like, oh yeah, Alex plays Magic. I just saw this for the first time.
This is hilarious.
Have you seen this? When the Magic movie was announced, I had 100 people post on my wall being like, oh, have you heard there's a Magic movie coming out? I knew way before you did.
Do we know the release date on that yet? Or
it's 2018. But that's also 2018 if they develop it on time and things go well.
Do we even know what that's going to be about? Is it going to be following Planeswalkers, or is it going to be following people like us playing Magic on the table?
They've stated that the reason they created the Neo Planeswalkers was because they were having a hard time selling their property to people because they didn't have consistent characters and IP to follow. So it's going to be following Jace.
Yeah, he's the main guy.
In fact, one of the reasons I think they're going to turn down having Jace show up too much is I think they're afraid of Jace fatigue, and they want when Jace is in the movie to be like people like him.
Yeah,
because currently Jace is like, oh, Jace again. Blah.
All right, we're tangenting now. Let's finish.
All right, so next we have Temur Battle Mage. It's a common instant for one red and one other. Target creature gains double strike until end of turn.
So this is only relevant basically for like infect decks that want a trample version of what Double Cleave already does.
Right, so Double Cleave is actually probably pretty close to playable in these decks. And the reason it wasn't is because giving something a double strike isn't the best thing on the planet, but trample is. And really, if you read this card, what it really says is target creature gets +4, first strike, and trample.
Yeah.
That card would see play in infect if it was green.
Why +4? So I did miss the ferocious ability that creature also gains trample until end of turn if it has power 4 or greater.
So +4 or better, because to be ferocious, it has to be a 4X.
Right,
so
gotcha.
The point is, like, this would be something to follow up an already big creature. Like, giant growth into this is then just kill them.
Yep.
They'd have to be playing red. Mind you, there's been... people have started playing just black-green, in fact. Like, Ben Stark just posted on Star City Games a video series of him playing just black green infect, and the black green infect deck could probably move into red, like the black green used to be blue black green.
Sure.
And for cards like this, or you know, the red undercosted infect creatures that don't normally see play because of the fact that red has the least amount of infect creatures in it.
Also, I mean, as far as I know, those decks don't really want to play it, but as far as removal goes, you get access to the best card in the format.
Lightning Bolt.
You just play it. So,
which I mean, they do play in a tempo style deck, so having Lightning Bolt seems like it couldn't be
get rid
of
a blocker.
Yeah.
I play infect in modern, and I have seen a few red green brews that do seem fun, that this could be cool in. So next up we have Ugin the Spirit Dragon. He's a Planeswalker for 8, has 7 loyalty counters coming in. His +2, Ugin the Spirit Dragon deals 3 damage to target creature or player, -X, exile each permanent with converted mana cost X or less, that's 1 or more colors, and -10, you gain 7 life, draw 7 cards, put up to 7 permanent cards from your hand onto the battlefield.
So it's another colorless Planeswalker.
It's Karn 2.0.
It's the second one, right?
Yeah, it's the second one. Karn was the first one, 7 mana. This has the highest potential of seeing play in Tron or control decks.
Yeah.
Tron more likely, because you could probably get this. They definitively can get this on turn 4. A lot of people are like, well, you can't get it on turn 3 for the 7 mana thing, which is what Karn is doing, and I don't think they're going to cut down on Karns for this. But the fact that normally they really only do that on turn 4 anyways, because normally it goes, you know, Tron land followed by red-green land so that you can Sylvan Scry for another Tron land, eventually getting the fourth land in play to having the full Tron cycle. This then comes into play that turn, and the minus ability is really what's important. Lightning Bolting every turn is fine. We already know that the format is built to be Lightning Bolt, you know, resistant, so that's not as strong as maybe it would be in standard, but the fact that you can play this, wipe their board, and keep a, like, Lightning Bolt on a stick in play is very strong.
Yeah, it costs 8 mana. I mean, the idea of doing... If you can resolve something for 8 mana in Modern, like, actually cast something for 8 right. mana, you're probably winning. I mean,
yeah, but the point is that this is the... Because it's colorless, the one deck that can cast 8 mana spells...
And I don't mean Treasure Cruise, by the way. Well, you still are probably
yeah,
winning.
Yeah, you're probably winning. I mean, the one deck that can play colorless mana this high, is it needs to be colorless. So that's why it's kind of relevant. Like, anything that's that big is relevant in that deck.
Yeah. I think it's... interesting from a flavor perspective that Ugin would end up showing up in this set. It's fine. I feel like when they go back to Eldrazi or when they go back to Zendikar, I would have expected.
Well, I think that's the point. I think this is the prequel to Zendikar. I mean, I've gone on record before already on this, but I think Zendikar's next fall. I think they've spent with Commander products and this and M15 a significant amount of time reminding the world of Zendikar.
Yeah, right.
The Commander product, two of the commanders were Zendikar characters.
Yeah.
The M15 had one of those characters as a demon again. It had Soul of Zendikar.
We've heard rumors of them reprinting the other set of the Fetchlands again. And
well, the Fetchlands also being the format, I actually don't think they're going to reprint the enemy Fetchlands, but Standard will have Fetchlands with Landfall starting in the fall.
Yeah.
So, like... It's all of these unique ways that things are working together. It just makes a lot of sense. It's possible that I'm just blatantly wrong, but Wizards has done so much setup for it that it'd be so surprising if we don't go back to the Eldrazi.
Do you think it's highly likely that we see the enemy color Manlands?
Yes, yes. That, I think, is highly likely. And even possibly the lands in the next fall set.
Yeah.
Because we're going to the two-block thing, so every fall set will have, like, lands, and then the next fall, you know, so the way it'll end up working, I can imagine enemy man lands in the fall to kind of go and burn out the Eldrazi version of the world.
Yeah.
And then Zendikar block will play out.
Yeah.
That'd be cool. Be
epic.
More monsters.
Yeah. More of my money going to Wizards of the Coast. All right. So next we have Warden of the First Tree. It's a 1/1 human for 1 green. It's a mythic. 1 white or black hybrid mana and 1 colorless. Warden of the First Tree becomes a human warrior for the power and toughness 3/3. He's basically a
figure of destiny
in green, white, and black.
So the issue is Figure of Destiny is not seeing any modern play, and it's just blatantly better than this card, and can see play in more decks than this card. The only way I can imagine this seeing is if there's like if green-black wants it, and the green-black wants Figure of Destiny, and they don't have access to it, so they haven't been able to play it. But now they have this card, like, as a weird Deathrite Shaman threat version of the card. I just don't see this card being that good in Modern. I honestly think it's overrated for Standard, even.
Yeah, it's notable because it's the first time that they've ever printed a one-drop mythic.
Right. Yeah. The on a financial perspective... It's the second time they've ever done a one-drop mythic. The first one was Dragon Master Outcast.
Oh, sure.
From Zendikar block. This one has the potential to be better.
Yep.
Because it has a better lineage, and it's just, like, its ability is relevant earlier.
And it's good with Training Grounds, and once again.
Dragon Master Outcast a mythic?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It definitely was.
So next... we did that one already. Okay. Next up is Right into Being.
This is actually the last card, so...
Yep.
This is the last card. And did I mention, by the way, that Warden of the First Tree is good with Training Grounds? Did I say that already?
No, not yet. So next is Right into Being. It's a common sorcery for 1 blue and 2 other. It says, look at the top 2 cards of your library. Manifest 1 of those cards. Then put the other on top or bottom of your library.
So this has the close second is my other favorite manifest card that's set behind Cloud Form or Sky Form, whatever the heck that card's called. And I think it's awesome. I think it's awesome that it's like essentially scry and manifest on the same card.
Right. Well, it basically lets you guarantee more legitimately that you're getting the creature you want to sneak into play or cheat into play, depending if it's giant or has a negative effect. It allows you make sure you get those instead of the lands and sorceries you don't want to be grabbing.
Do you think it's totally appropriately costed? You couldn't have made it cost 2, right?
No, I think it'd be too strong. Yeah. I think then in Legacy you have consistent turn 3 Emrakuls, if not more than that, because you have like Lotus Bloom and Lotus Petals to do it even faster.
Seems really good. I like this card a lot.
That's the other point. If it was 2, it'd be broken in Legacy. So 3 seems like it could be good in Modern.
Yeah.
Because you can, I mean, it's not an instant, but, like, your opponent taps out, and they don't know what's going on, you can just be like, boom, boom, Emrakuld, goodbye.
Right.
And it even curves out, turn 3 this, they don't have a removal spell for whatever reason, because they're pod.
Yeah.
Turn 4, Restoration Angel,
Yep.
You're it'd great. Be one thing if it was put the other card in your graveyard or at the bottom of your library or at the top of your library, but the fact that you get to choose is
ship
crazy.
The land or whatever. It's just
yeah.
It seems
yeah, well, yeah, you also set up your next card to be good. So, exactly. Like, that's already a decent effect of like pseudo drawing a card. Yeah, I mean, I love this card. I think this card
3
is
mana put
playable.
A 2/2 into play, and Scry is already like
is already good.
Pretty
yeah.
reasonable. The yeah. fact that it's like a specific card, and yeah, it seems good. Yeah, I like yeah. this card a lot.
Yep.
So overall, I'm pretty excited for Fate Reforged. I think it's a handful of yeah. exciting cards. It does suffer from the second set syndrome a little bit. I think Manifest is awesome.
Right. I think this set is better than almost any other set, second set in memory. Like, a lot of times, third sets are the ones that add the powerful cards because they're like, yeah, we can just mess around and throw in the best ideas we have.
It's only legal second, for a while, yeah.
Right. And second sets are like, oh, we want to hold on for the third set before we make all the cool cards. So the second sets always kind of suck. That's one of the reasons they're changing the way blocks work is because second sets just generally were bad in the past because yeah. they're like, we don't want to make any good cards, so we'll put one or two good cards. So Jace is the only good card. Or like and I think that's the last second set that I liked was World Wake.
Yeah, that could be true. I didn't mind Dark Ascension. Dark Ascension was all right.
Yeah, but it didn't add that much. Like, what's the best card in Dark Ascension? Huntmaster of the Fells?
Probably.
Yeah. I mean, like, I wouldn't open a Dark Ascension pack.
Hmm.
I would open World Wake packs all day.
That's fair. That's fair.
So, yeah. I mean, I think the set's going to be great. I'm super excited for the draft format. I love what they're... I mean, I'm a big flavor person. I'm a big... Yeah. Like, I like limited... So like the ability where we're going to get like two cool ways. I'm excited to see how it works with Dragons of Tarkir, how like, cause there's going to be cards that are bad in draft with Khans of Tarkir that are going to like switch on their head and be great with Dragons of Tarkir.
Yeah. The other thing we didn't mention about the cards is that there's a cycle of multicolor legendary dragons that they're not really that good, but as far as commander goes, they are exciting for commander players because yeah, it's just more generals to have multicolor dragons.
And I think like in standard, if we want to talk about standard cards, I think the blue black one's going to see play. I think I actually think it's like a staple in standard as a control finisher because it gets rid of 1/1s, which
and
kills Elspeth
and
like, when it comes into play. Yeah,
Evasive and Hexproof.
Right, and that's yeah what we talked about before. Evasive and Hexproof is something to look out for.
Always.
I mean, Geist of St. Draft is a format staple, and it's not evasive with Hexproof for a 2/2. Yeah. So, you know, there's definitely things to keep an eye out. I think this set's been awesome. I'm really excited. You know, guys, remind you guys always, please email us, tweet at us, find us on the internet. I am Kes Wiley, at Kes Wiley.
I'm Ben Bateman Media on every social media platform. Find me, Instagram, Twitter.
And I am at Craig Blanchett.
And, you know, we are at the MMCast. That's probably the best way to find us. You know, Craig is actually, he's starting this thing called Toy Surprise Daily. It's a thing where they open up cool toys every day. Why don't you tell people about it a little bit?
Yeah, so Toy Surprise Daily is a cool new channel that we started up on YouTube, and you can go to Toy Surprise Daily and see new toys opened up every day. So we open up a lot of mystery minifigures and you know, things of that nature. We do a lot of Lego builds and a lot of fun stuff.
You know, define Toy Surprise Daily. Look at the links below on rocketjump.com. As always, make sure to check out the Command Zone, not the Command Cast, on rocketjump.com. Craig has actually appeared on that show a couple times.
Yes, Jimmy Wong and Josh Lee Kawhi host that, and it's about Commander, which is something that, you know, we all play quite a bit. So if you guys are looking for any kind of interesting looks at Commander or stuff like that, definitely give them a listen.
And you can check it out. You know, link below. Remember to tweet at us if you think any of our choices for good cards, modern or bad cards, or we're just blatantly wrong about cards. Right now, tweet us. We will literally respond to you immediately with our rebuttal of anger, and we are always right.
Yeah,
and
we're super, super, super excited about interacting with you guys about Magic cards. So if you like,
if you guys are looking for a Magic debate, we're the place to go.
100%.
100%. Yeah, so we'll see you next week. This has been Alex Kessler.
Ben Bateman.
And Craig Blanchett.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to the mmcast@rocketjump.com. See you later, alligator.